Charming. Prince Charming. What a choice of words. I hope she's going to stay away from him now, Kat says, before he does more damage.
Or, Cole presents, she could actually talk to him and ask him what's going on. I agree,
Reese says.
Have her just go at him like Kat goes at me.
Kat laughs. I go at you, huh?
Hell yeah, you do. But a good fight and fix works miracles.
But you're you, Kat says. What if this guy's a jerk?
Or not.
Cole presents again. Or not is what I told her. I say, everything isn't what it seems. She should talk to him. Is she going to do it? Kat asks. I don't know, I say. But if she does, I hope it's the right decision. I hope I'm not helping some kind of player play her. I rotate and lift my cup off the tray, pouring powdered creamer inside and taking a sip. I sent you a cheat sheet for tonight, Cole, I say, trying to get back to business. It should be in your email. Cole sets his cup on the counter.
I need a minute before we go, Reese.
He doesn't wait for a reply.
Let's go talk before I leave, Lori.
Adrenaline surges through me. My back to business gave him an opening that I won't deny I knew would exist, and he's taken it, and quickly. I nod and ignore my coffee, and trying to seem as normal as I can, I point at Kat. Send me the file, and quickly turn to follow Cole. I exit the kitchen, and he motions me forward down the hallway. We pass the bathroom where I took that pregnancy test when I thought I might be the mother of his child. It reminds me of the torment one night had caused me, but it's not one night anymore. We enter the foyer where we pause on the other side of the wall, a hallway between us and anyone else in the apartment, where we can hear footsteps and not be seen. Cole steps around to face me, big and broad, and every bit as overwhelming as he always is, and I like that about him far too much to be his employee. He advances on me, and I hit the wall, his hands pressed to the wall on either side of me as they were in the stairwell. His piercing blue eyes fix on me, seconds ticking by where I want him to touch me when I shouldn't want him to touch me, passing like hours. What are you doing, Cole? I whisper.
I'm trying not to touch you, and it's fucking killing me.
He says it with such low, fierce, pained intensity that it's all I can do not to touch him. Stop, I say, and I'm not sure if I'm talking to him or me.
I'm not doing this, sweetheart. We are.
You shouldn't call me sweetheart.
All right. Lori, is that better?
Not when you say it like you're thinking about us being naked together again.
I am thinking about us being naked together again, and so are you. And don't say I'm your boss. I get it. I know how hard you've worked. I know what this job means to you. I will protect you. I will help you, but we aren't going to stop wanting each other.
I'm a challenge, I say, voicing a concern I've tried to bury, but it refuses to be hidden. That's what this is. His hands come down on my waist, scorching me where they rest.
You still think I'm a player?
He demands.
Is that what that was in the kitchen?
My hands go to his hands. No, that was me saying that I'm sorry for not asking you about that woman. I'm sorry for assuming you were with her. But let's be real here. I am a challenge. I'm the one that got away, and if you once again have me,
I'll want you again and again.
He lowers his head, cheek next to mine, lips at my ear.
And again.
Heat rushes through me, but I manage to whisper, you can't know that. He pulls back, and his lips linger above mine.
I do know. Come home with me tonight, and I'll make you believe that.
Cole. He kisses me, a deep slide of tongue that has me melting in every possible way before he says,
after the party, say yes.
Chapter 24. Lori. Standing in the foyer with Cole's hands on my body, his breath a warm trickle on my cheek, I feel like this is deja vu of the night we met, only instead of a spanking, he's asking for more. That spanking had been a getaway, a daring night that had no consequences until now. Going home with him has consequences. It means I'm sleeping with my boss. It means my career and my love life become tied together. Nevertheless, Cole really does feel like everything I have ever wanted in one perfect package. I want to say yes. I want to know where this goes. But right when I'm about to throw caution to the wind, just when I open my mouth to say yes, heavy footsteps head in our direction.
You're coming home with me,
Cole says, as if he's read my unspoken answer and he's unwilling to allow me to change my mind. With that command, and it is a command, he releases me and puts a good 2 steps between us. Desperate to appear professional, I quickly say, and not quietly, did you want to go over that cheat sheet I emailed you for the party guests?
Not necessary,
Cole says, his lips giving a sexy little curve as he adds,
I'll have you by my side, keeping me in check, I'm sure.
I'm still way too warm and ready for this man, and that is not good, considering Reese rounds the corner.
That client I told you I was on the fence about,
he says, focused on Cole.
He wants to meet for coffee this morning.
Cole motions to his clothes.
We're not dressed for a meeting. He can't come to the party. If this guy is innocent, I want to help him,
he says.
But something is holding me back. I'd like to give him some time. I told him we're on our way to run. He doesn't care about how we're dressed. All right, then,
Cole says.
Let's do it.
He looks at me.
I'll pick you up for the party at 6.
I would say that won't be necessary, I say quickly, eager to sidestep any idea of this man coming to my crap apartment, a reminder that we are not equals. We are not the same. We are not right now. Cat is never going to let me leave in time to change at home. And because he's obviously going to ask about my change of clothes, I reluctantly head him off with, and I'm wearing one of her dresses anyway. His expression doesn't shift, but I feel the probe in his stare.
All right, then,
he says, this time to me before he glances at Reese.
We headed out now. We are,
Reese says, glancing at me.
Take care of my girl.
You know I will.
I do, actually,
he says,
and I appreciate it.
With that, they head to the door and disappear. The minute the door shuts, I breathe out, and not with relief. Those 2 just suck all the air in the room, and you have to hold on to what you have, like I need to hold on with Cole. But I'm not sure if that means hold on to him or hold on to my determination to not be that girl sleeping with her boss. Right now, though, Kat needs me, and Lord only knows I owe her the world in friendship and support. She is fast becoming a sister. I round the corner and quickly make my way to the kitchen. I find her at the island, frowning at her computer screen. It sucks, she says. Are we doing this again? I ask, crossing to grab my coffee that is now cold. We never stopped doing this, she says. I stick my coffee in the microwave. Have you found another assistant? I ask, because being overwhelmed has to be a part of this. No, she says. I can't find anyone worth hiring. Tell me about it, I say, grabbing my coffee and joining her again. I'm looking for an assistant for Cole. Do you want me to keep an eye out for you too? Yes, please, she says, setting her MacBook aside. I don't know how the city is this populated and we have no one worth hiring. Just use me until you find someone, I say, sipping my coffee. Her rejection is instant. I'm not going to do that to you. You have a new boss and a new career. And a whole lot more, I think. How close are you to done with the book? I ask, setting her up for my next point I plan to make. A few chapters, she says, but it's not right. I know when it's not right. A new assistant can't learn and help at this late stage, I say. It makes sense for me to help. I love this project. I want to help. Her expression is conflicted. I'll pay you. You already paid me, I say, with help and friendship in all kinds of ways. I key my MacBook to life. Did you send me the file? Not yet, she says, but she makes no move to do so now. Instead, she just looks at me. What? I'm waiting to hear the real scoop on you and Cole. Why did I know this was going to be an issue today? I ask, buying time to think. I want to tell her, desperately want to tell her, but Kat is married to Reese, and this feels like it needs to be between me and Cole, at least for now. You and Cole are throwing flames together. I've never seen either of you charge a room in the presence of another person you aren't even touching. I don't deny the truth. I might not tell Kat everything, but I'm not lying to her. Okay, fine. We have a little spark. Not little, she says. A big, big flame. What's the real story with you two? We aren't going to work until we get past this, are we? Nope, not a chance in hell. And why wouldn't you tell me? We're fast becoming like sisters. She's right. We are. And I love her to pieces. I just don't want to lie to her or ignore Cole's right to privacy either. I literally ran into him outside your building a few months back, I say, giving her something and a portion of the truth at that. I dropped my garment bag in the process and he helped me pick it up. I add, he asked me out for coffee and I declined, and now he's my boss. Neither of us knew until we saw each other at the office. Oh, wow, she says. How weird was that for you and him? Actually, it's fine. We talked about it and we're past it. Yes, but you're not. You have chemistry with him. I can't believe you turned him down when he asked you out just based on that alone. Not to mention the fact that he's an incredible guy and so good-looking and you never date. I mean, my God, you should have at least made that one-night stand with him, not some other guy. She's obviously trying to find out if Cole was my one-night stand, and I'm not going there. It's not my secret alone. How would that work? I ask, sticking to the day I've admitted to meeting Cole. Hey, sexy stranger, I just finished a job, have another to go to before I check on my sick mother, but about 11 I could pencil you and I in for sexy time. She crinkles her nose. You could have at least gone for coffee. Come on, Kat. I couldn't think about a one-night stand at that point in time. And what if it had become more? A girl like I was then, struggling with no money, is either a charity case to a guy like Cole or someone who he thinks is after his money. That's crazy, she says. You have the world before you. More so now, yes, I say. But we're talking about when I first met Cole. That day when I turned him down, everything was uncertain. I wouldn't have wanted that imbalance. It would have affected us both. And now? We're back to he's my boss. That's pretty imbalanced. You can move to Reese's team, she says, now or at any point. Reese's team is full. Cole needs me. And the truth is, we connect more than physically. I can tell we're going to get each other professionally. I studied his cases and track record. I'm lucky to get to work with him and learn from him. Okay. Well, let's just be straight with each other. When there's the kind of spark you two have, it's going to win. I open my mouth to object and she holds up a hand. Don't say otherwise because this kind of attraction has a life of its own. So just entertain what I'm saying to you, okay? Yes, okay. What if he's your Reese? Kat, you said you'd listen. I purse my lips and she continues. It starts with the kind of attraction you've never felt before. Intense, uncontrollable, palpable like it is with you two. So what I want to say to you is this. Cole is a good man. He will not let whatever this is with you two hurt you. He won't, and neither will Reese. I don't want to be the girl who slept her way to the top. Be the girl who killed it in court and wins, and that won't happen. And if Cole wasn't as damn good as he is, Reese wouldn't have partnered with him. I will, I say. We will. Just communicate with him and us, she says. You're with us and him. If you were with another firm, I'd give you different advice, but you're not. It'll be okay. Thanks, Kat. What are friends for? Exactly, I say. So send me your book. She pulls her Mac back in front of her and powers it up. Here you go, she sighs, punching a key on her computer. Sent. Now I'm going to go pull out a few dresses you might like to try on. I can't watch you read, and I don't want you to be nervous about what you can or can't wear. She disappears, and I flash back to the moment on the street when I'd walked away from Cole and how much regret I'd felt. I'm where I belong, and I'm going to stay the path. He's in my path. I grab my phone from my purse and stare at Cole's number, and finally I type, "Can you call me sometime before the party?" He replies almost instantly.
We're about to meet with this potential client. I'll call you after that before we run.
Can you text me first so I can go somewhere private?
Yes, of course. Is this about your rules?
I consider that a moment and then reply with, I don't know, Cole. I just want to talk to you.
I'll call soon, he replies.
I'm not sure what I'm going to say to him besides giving him a heads up about what I told Kat. I'm not sure what I want him to say to me. No, that's wrong. I want him to say something that makes going home with him tonight somehow as acceptable as he made me saying yes to that spanking. I want to be close to him again. I want to be naked with him again. I want to go home with Cole. Chapter 25. Lori. I stick my phone back in my purse and do my best to set aside my one-time Prince Charming with bad bedroom and courtroom skills and start reading Kat's manuscript, and in a matter of a minute, I'm absorbed in a case that has long intrigued me. June Smith, a college-aged girl, was convicted of killing her dorm mate and sentenced to death row. She died of cancer while in prison, and now, 5 years later, she's innocent, and a now-deceased janitor for the school was the killer. I'm a good portion through the parts of the book I haven't read when Kat shows back up. Well, she asks, sitting back down. It's amazing, I assure her. The story is mind-blowing in so many ways, tragic and compelling, and you embrace that in every way. You're sure? Yes, of course. You have hordes of fans for your column and books for a reason. Deep down, you know you nailed this, and you'll embrace that too once you get past the deadline. That's how you work. I've seen it with every big project you start. Maybe, she concedes. What about comments? I always love your comments. I did mark a few places that concern me. Some of the research I did right before I left isn't connecting. Tell me. She says eagerly, because that's Kat. She is all about telling the best story. We start going through the sections I've marked, and hours pass in which I can't help but anticipate Cole's call that doesn't come. He's either still in his meeting or just can't talk freely, and I'd rather wait than rush with him anyway. Just as long as we can talk before I'm faced with tonight's decision, I'll be happy. It's near noon when we both shove down bagels and try to wrap up. I still need an interview with the twin brother, Kat says. This is his sister, and his life was torn apart as well. He told me he'd talk to you, I say. I pre-screened him weeks ago. She holds her hands up. I know, but he changed his tune. He won't talk to me. I've tried. I've given up. I connected with him, I say, grabbing a file on the counter to look up his number. I'll call him and see if I can recreate that and convince him to talk to you. Thank you, she says. But FYI, my public persona seems to really turn him off, and I get it. He's been abused by the press. He has, I say, and some pretty horrible things were said about his sister and even assumed about him as her twin. Exactly, she says. He had to leave his employer and do contract computer programming. It ruined his life and hers. Which is why he needs to speak out, I say, punching his number in my cell phone, and he answers quickly.
Hello?
Dylan, hi. This is Lori Havens. Do you remember me? We spoke once before.
I remember you. You're working on that book with Kat Summer.
I just read the book, I say, baiting his curiosity, infusing my voice with the excitement I genuinely feel for the project.
And?
It would be perfect if it had your viewpoint, I say. How can Kat tell this story without showing how the failure of the justice system destroyed everyone in your circle? We need to make sure this doesn't happen to other people.
How do I know that's how she'll represent this? He demands. I don't want to be a pawn used for headlines and scandal.
I look at Kat. I think you should ask her that question. Look into Kat's eyes, and I promise you, you'll know she's a good person. Read her Kat Does Crime columns. She's the right voice to tell this story.
I've read her stuff, he says. It seems okay.
Then you'll talk to her? I ask, seeing his reply as an olive branch. Just talk to her. Interview her.
I'll talk to you.
Can I bring her?
Yes.
He says, sounding irritated.
Bring her, this afternoon.
What time? I ask.
3 o'clock.
We'll see you then. We disconnect, and I set my phone down. I know the party is tonight, but he said he'd see us today, and I didn't want to talk myself out of it. 3 o'clock.
You're brilliant, Kat declares. Which is why we hired her.
Reese says, joining us and quickly stepping to Kat's side. A tingle along my skin tells me Cole is behind me, and I twist around in my seat to find Reese headed toward Kat and Cole leaning one shoulder on the archway. And Lord help me, my adrenaline spikes and my heart starts racing. He's gorgeous. He's here. He's intensely focused on me, his expression unreadable. But there is an edge to him, a cutting undercurrent I've seen in him before now, just not directed at me. It's definitely directed at me now.
Walk me to the elevator, Lori.
Our phone call is here and now, in person. Somehow that's so much more intense. Yes, of course. Kat gives me a knowing look before I turn away and slip off the bar stool. Cole straightens and steps out of the archway to allow me to pass. He joins me immediately, and once again we walk down the hallway, but this time we don't stop in the foyer. He motions me to the door, and I walk that direction. He's there by the time I'm there, opening it for me to pass through. I don't hesitate to follow his direction, and we don't speak, but I have never been so aware of any other human being in my life. I step into the hallway and Cole joins me. For a moment, he's towering over me, and we're facing each other, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to melt from the heat we're radiating. Kat's right. How does anyone fight something like this? Everyone wants to feel this. They wish for something this intense. And maybe it's just physical, but it's no less fierce.
Come on,
he says, taking my hand, and I let him. I can't stop him. I don't want to stop him. I want to go where he's leading me. We round the corner to the elevator banks, and instead of punching the elevator button, he heads for the stairwell. He opens the door, and in a blink, we're inside the corridor, and his fingers are slicing into my hair, and his mouth is closing down on mine. I don't even consider resisting. I need this. I need him. And when his tongue touches mine, I feel it everywhere. My sex, my nipples, my entire body. I moan into his mouth and grip his shirt while his hand molds me close. I don't want it to end. I don't want to have to think or be logical or cautious. His hand slips under my shirt and mine under his, that spicy, familiar scent of him a drug seducing my senses. I need more. I want more. And I don't realize how much that is true until right here and now. His hand slips under my sweats and he cups my backside. The same hand that spanked me. Because he makes the forbidden sultry and sexy and necessary.
Cole. The only sound in the stairwell is the moan that escapes Lori's lips when I mold her hips to my hips, my erection pressing against her belly. It echoes inside the concrete walls, a sound meant for my ears and only my ears, like I believe she's meant for me and no one else. It's the jolting moment that pulls me back to the present. I press Lori against the wall and tear my mouth from hers. We have to stop before I forget we're in a stairwell and finally find my way back inside you again. And now it's a mix of her breathing and my breathing that fills the small space, both of us on edge, both of us needing what we've been denied for months. What should have been. What I won't let her run from again. Her chin lifts and she grabs fistfuls of my shirt. You make me crazy, Cole Brooks, she hisses. You make me do things I wouldn't do with anyone else. I lean in and press my cheek to hers, my lips by her ear. The feeling is mutual, sweetheart, I whisper. You're still doing it, she bites out. So are you, I assure her. She presses her hands to my chest. Stop. I lean back to look at her. I can't stop. You can't stop, and what's crazy about that is that I don't lose control. I don't think about a woman when I should be thinking about other things. I don't fuck people I work with. And yet here I am, and here we are. Exactly, she says. I don't risk my future over a man. You think I'd let you get hurt? Not intentionally, but we're in a stairwell all over each other, Cole. Kat said we're glaringly obvious, and she's clearly correct, which, by the way, is why I asked to talk to you, but I couldn't remember that fact until this moment. And why is that? Because we were too busy doing everything but talking. I had to tell her that we met on the street that day and that you asked me to coffee. And she said what, I ask. If we're obvious to her, we can be obvious to others. I narrow my eyes on her. Did she say that? Or did you say that? I'm saying that. Kat and Reese are my friends. They'll see what others do not. We're out of control. My hands settle at her waist and I pull her to me. Let's try a repeat of my prior question. Did Kat say that or did you?
Me. I said it.
What else did Kat say to you?
Nothing that I want to repeat, she says.
Tell me anyway. I order softly. Her hands grip my wrists as if she wants to control me. Or maybe herself, and holy hell, her hands on my any part of my body just make me want her hands on every part of my body. Summarizing, the writing is on the wall. We're going to end up naked, and I need to accept that and plan accordingly. What else? She left the what else to us, but she told me that if it made me more comfortable, I could move to Reese's team. And you said what, Lori? A door above us opens and crashes shut. Lori shoves out of my arms as footsteps trample downward toward us. Lori heads for the door and I quickly follow on her heels a moment after she exits to the elevator bank, and if I think she will run, I'm wrong. She whirls on me and pokes my chest.
I told her that I'm staying with you. You need me, Cole. You have no staff and I won't let you down or betray you. But Kat was right. This isn't going away, and I need to deal with that and you.
And how exactly do you plan on dealing with me, Lori?
I'm going to go home with you. Fuck you. Not you, me. And get this out of my system and yours. Then Monday morning, I'm going to do my job, get my degree, and start my career.
She turns and starts to walk away. I let her because, A, her ass is about as perfect a view in those sweatpants as any man could hope for, and B, I know what she knows but won't admit yet. I do need her, and not just professionally. Outside of my new role as her boss, I have wanted her so damn long at this point that I have a deep need for her I cannot escape. And I'm not alone. She needs me too. And tonight, in between orgasms, I'm going to make her say it.
Chapter 26. Lori. Tonight has to happen. With those words playing in my mind and the taste of coal on my lips, I pause outside Kat and Reese's apartment to validate the decision I just made to give us one more night. We need this. Cole and I both need closure, and I don't believe that can happen in an office or a stairwell. We need to be alone. We need to fuck each other senseless and then talk in that order, because words are not going to mean anything until we get the edge off. And I'm not going to mean anything I say to him, not until I stop melting every time he touches me. Lust is distracting us both, and the truth is, Cole was right when he said we needed closure. I left him in that hotel room. We came face to face again as boss and employee, and we're reacting to those facts, not dealing with them. And dealing with them is control. Feeling good about my decision, I take it upon myself to open the door to Kat and Reese's apartment, and it's as if Kat is waiting to pounce on me. The minute I enter the foyer, she is there, and she's changed into dark blue jeans and a dark blue silk blouse. We need to go if we're going to make that interview, she says as I'm shutting the door. As it is, she continues, we have to take the subway to have any chance of being on time. She motions me forward. Go change into something in my closet. I don't care what. You know your way. I don't argue. This interview is a big deal for her, and I can't accompany her in sweats. I hurry around the corner and up the stairs toward the master bedroom, where Kat and I have had more than a few work sessions in cozy chairs. 10 minutes later, I'm in black jeans, a black lace blouse, and Kat's ankle boots. Another 15 minutes later, and we step onto an empty subway car. With plenty of seating options, I point to the end where I can see what is coming at us. The car starts to move. I was thinking about you and Cole. Kat announces. I twist around to face her. Why are you thinking about me and Cole? Oh, I don't know. You went to talk, and you two didn't choose the living room, den, office, or anywhere in the apartment. You went outside, and you came back red-faced with swollen lips. I inhale and face forward. We had a heated debate. She laughs. I could tell. I smirk in her direction. Don't be funny. I can't help myself, she says. But jokes aside, I wanted to say something to you when you were captive and had to listen. I laugh. That is so you. She grins. It is, isn't it? She rotates to face me. First, just as a side note that I didn't mention this morning, because I consult at the firm, I know that the company policy allows for inter-office dating. Read your handbook. The procedures are inside. Cole and I are not dating. Back to what I was thinking about you and Cole. You met, and you walked away from him, but he came back to you. As my boss. That's not the point. You found each other again. I think that's pretty incredible. Twice, I think. He came back to me twice, but I don't say that to her. It's just so complicated and confusing, Kat. I know, she says, taking my hand. I get that a lot has happened that you couldn't see coming. I know what it's like to finally have good happening in your life, but also fear that more bad will follow. But sometimes, just like the bad, we don't see the good things coming until they're here. Like us meeting in the coffee shop, and the scholarship, and maybe, just maybe, Cole. Things happen for a reason. You say Cole needs you, but the way I see it, you need each other. The loudspeaker sounds and the car halts, saving me from a reply on a topic where we are divided. She thinks need is good, and I do not. But then she needs Reese, and he makes her feel safe in that need. But they're equals, both just as successful and powerful. Cole and I are not. My mother and father were not. To me, need is a bad word. It's dirty, messy, and emotional. With Cole, there was never supposed to be anything but the dirty. There was never supposed to be need or emotion. I can't change the fact that I need him professionally. I just can't get emotional. I can't fall for Cole Brooks. I won't fall for him. The interview for Kat's book goes well, and when it's done, Kat and I split up in the subway with just enough time for me to head home, gather what I need to get ready at her place, and return. I even have time to grab Starbucks for my mother, who is in her pink pajamas with little angels on them, making coffee when I walk in. "Look what I have," I say, delivering her the cup. "You are my angel," she says, lighting up. We chat for a few minutes, and I tell her all about the party before I pack a small overnight bag that I'll need because I am staying with Cole. My mother is back in the kitchen making her morning oatmeal when I exit the bedroom, and I'm just about to leave when I pause at the door with a question. "Did you talk to your architect?" I ask, turning to eye her reaction. She purses her lips. "He came by to see me and ask me out again, but I avoided him." I think of my attempts to avoid Cole. Okay, I don't think I actually have any attempts to avoid Cole, aside from the morning after I slept with him. Bad example. I set my bag on the floor and crossed to stand on the opposite side of the counter from her. "I thought you were going to talk to him." "We'll see," she says, cutting her stare to stir her oatmeal. "I just need to go with what feels right." I'm torn here. I don't want her to end up dependent on another man, but I don't want her bitter and alone either. I press my hands to the counter. "Don't judge him based on what Dad did to you." Her gaze jerks to mine. "Your father made mistakes," she says, "but those mistakes tore him up. He died before he could fix them, but he would have fixed them." "You're still blind where he's concerned." "I'm not blind at all, but I think this past year has clouded your vision. He was good to us, and there was not a day of my life with him that I felt alone or unloved. If you're objective, there was not a day in your life you felt unloved either. Love doesn't look like what he did to us. Love is flawed and fragile and beautiful and untouchable. Love looked just like your father, so yes, I will judge Joe and every other man by your father, and unless I need someone like I did your father, I will not be with that person. Need is the issue, I argue, frustrated at her use of that word. If you need someone, then they control you. They can hurt you. You can't love someone and not need them, honey. And I hope this hell we have lived hasn't ruined you for love. I hope one day you understand what I'm telling you. I hate how this has affected you. This isn't about me, isn't it? She challenges. You need to start living again. I'm fine now. I even thought about moving next door with Marie-Anne just to let you have some freedom. I blanch. You aren't moving out, I say. No, that is not going to happen. We can't even afford two rents. She has blood sugar issues, my mother says. My rent is my ability to help her figure out why she can't get that problem under control, and she has to, or it will kill her. No, I say. This lets you know I'm near, but you can start living again. I glance at the clock on the stove. I need to go, and I hate it, but we're talking about this weekend. I love you. I love you too, but I'm back. I'm me again. I'll be okay if you live your life. Go kick butt at that party and let them know Lori Havens is there to make a statement that lasts. I will, I say, and you eat your oatmeal and don't even think about packing. I kiss my fingers and hold them out to her and then cross the room. I've just grabbed my bag and opened the door when she calls out, Honey. I rotate and look at her. Yes? I'm glad you are living your dreams. No more regrets, okay? The statement punches me in the gut, and Cole is immediately in my mind. No more regrets, I say, and I exit to the hallway, shut the door, and lean against it. Once again, I think of the moment on the street when I left Cole behind. I think of the moment I'd stepped on the elevator after our night together when I was sure I would never see him again. And then here is tonight with Cole, and I no longer know what I want to happen. I'm confused, and I feel oddly alone. My mother has depended on me for so long that I don't know how to digest another reality. Lord help me, but I feel like I really need tonight with Cole. I arrive at Reese and Kat's apartment, where I'm greeted by Kat wearing a robe and a towel on her head. We have 1 hour to get ready, she says. I left you a selection of dresses on the spare bed, and I'll come check on you soon. She dashes away, and I follow, both of us darting up the stairs. At the top, Kat darts into the bedroom, while Reese appears in the doorway, still dressed in his sweats. Hello, Lori, he says. Hi, Reese, I say, without stopping, darting left toward the spare bedroom I've used for a few naps between jobs. Reese's low chuckle, a warm and friendly acceptance of how I've become a part of their lives, follows me to the spare bedroom I dash inside of, shutting the door with a smile. I love these two. They really have become friends, and that feeling of being alone has, for now at least, faded. Of course, they're also Cole's friends, and I can't think about where that leads us or how awkward that could get. Not now, not this night. I eye the dresses on the bed, drawn to the burgundy shade of one of them, but I don't have time to look now. I dart toward the bathroom. Once I've showered, finished my makeup, and flat-ironed my hair to a long, silky shine, I pull on black lace-top thigh highs and a lacy black panty and bra set. Knocking sounds on the door, and I pull on a robe. Hurrying forward, I open the door to find Kat still in a robe. But like me, her hair and makeup are done. I want you to model the dresses. I'm dying to see how they look. This is Kat. She's excited for me to wear one of her dresses. There is no favor I owe her. There is just generosity and friendship. She is just one of the reasons I have to get control of me and Cole. I won't cause a disruption in the workplace for the people who have helped me. That includes Cole. An hour later, we arrive at the building where Summer and Brooks practice law, with Kat and Reese proving a breathtaking duet as we do. Her in a gorgeous knee-length black dress that flares just below the knee, him in a fitted black suit with a pinstripe. They look like a king and queen, while I at least look like a loyal subject worthy of their time, and how can I not? I'm wearing a stunning knee-length burgundy pencil dress with a V-neck and two straps on both sides. It hadn't been my first choice, though, despite my love for the color and style. I'd wanted to wear a simple black dress, a conservative dress that felt in turn appropriate. But that didn't happen. Not with Kat sitting on the bed eager to see me try on all the choices. "You must wear that one," she'd proclaimed the minute I'd presented myself in the burgundy. "Because it will get you all the right attention." Of course she'd meant Cole's attention, which tonight I will embrace. I want his attention. I'm allowed to want his attention, just this night. We've stepped into the elevator when Cole, devastatingly handsome in a gray three-piece suit paired with a gray and blue tie, appears in the doorway. "Gorgeous ladies," he says, giving Kat a wink before he looks at me, his eyes simmering with male appreciation. There are words exchanged between Reese, Cole, and Kat, but it buzzes in my ears, nondescript, unintelligible, for the thrumming of my heart in my chest and ears. There is just Cole, stepping into the car, shrinking the tiny space and claiming the spot to my left with Kat on my right. There is just Cole's spicy scent, teasing my nostrils with erotic promise. Cole's big body next to mine, his shoulder brushing mine, and the smattering of goosebumps lifting on my skin at his nearness. The door is shut, and the car starts to move, and I can feel him looking at me even before he asks, "Are you nervous?" He discreetly catches my fingers with his, heat radiating up my arm and across my chest where my nipples pucker. I swallow and look at him, the collision of our eyes and the heat in the deep blue of his weakening my knees. No man but this one has ever weakened my knees. Should I be? I ask, when of course we are not talking about the party. We're talking about me going home with him.
"Not at all,"
he says, and perhaps it's just me, but I swear his voice is low, rough, sexy.
"Because you'll be with me,"
he adds,
"and I know exactly what I want and what you need to get out of this night."
His fingers stroke my palm on that promise, darts of pleasure shooting through my sex, and I suddenly can't remember why needing Cole Brooks is a problem. I'm sure I will. I know I will. Just not when he's touching me or looking at me. Most definitely not when he's kissing me later. And when he's naked. Well, when he's naked, I'm just going to let it happen. I'm going to let myself need him. All of him. More of him until it's enough of him. Until we're done with each other. Then need won't matter.
Chapter 27. Cole. I have never wanted to fuck a woman as badly as I want to fuck Lori Havens right here and now in this elevator, and we're not even alone. That I want her to the point of distraction and have for months now is a problem that ends tonight. The floors tick by, 20 to be exact, each allowing me an opportunity to imagine the many ways to take this woman. Bent over my desk, me driving inside her until she begs me to stop, and her sitting on my desk, her legs around my neck, my head buried between her thighs. Top the list. Of course, there's her on her knees. The elevator doors open, and holy fucking hell, at least we're a little closer to the hour when Lori will be on my tongue and on my cock. A few hours from now, she'll be mine. With that certain future before me, I steel my willpower. That is, until Lori follows Kat and Reese out of the car ahead of me, and I'm allowed a perfect view of her heart-shaped backside in that burgundy dress. Change of plans, I decide, checking my watch to confirm there is a good 30 minutes until the party starts, adequate time for me to find a place to pull Lori's dress up, slip inside her, and fuck her. Just long enough to hear those sexy moans of hers. A fantasy I savor as I step out of the elevator car and to her side. That is, until Maria rushes through the open double doors to our right, where our newly minted unoccupied space is being used for the party, and blows that all to hell. "We have a problem," she announces, stopping in front of us, her attire of jeans and a t-shirt making it clear that she hasn't had time to change. "The catering company had a fire," she continues. "They canceled hours ago." "What?" Kat exclaims. Why didn't you call us? Because I thought I had it handled, Maria says, pressing her hand to her forehead. And I handle worse than this most weeks.
Oh my God, Kat breathes out, turning to Reese. Oh my God.
Don't panic, Maria says quickly. I should have prefaced that statement by saying it's handled. Somehow LaRue, the restaurant we all adore down the road, agreed to save us, but they showed up with no sweets and no coffee. We really need some kind of sweets.
I'll help make phone calls, Kat says. Someone can help.
Time is an issue, I say. Do we have the champagne we ordered?
Yes, Maria confirms. All is well on that end.
We're boozing people up and feeding them then, I reply. Call it good.
Agreed, Reese says. How many of the partners are here?
Most of them, Maria says. But none of them know there's a problem. I didn't want to deal with them and this at the same time.
No food was a problem, I say. Skipping dessert and coffee is not a problem. Your job is done and done well, as always.
Again, I agree, Reese chimes in. Kat and I can manage the masses, Maria, he adds, slipping his arm around Kat's shoulder.
You go take a breather and change clothes. We'll toast your hard work and our future when you get back.
Kat twists in his arms to face him. You go manage the masses, she orders.
I get it, you're a guy and it doesn't feel important, but it is. We need dessert and coffee. This is a big event and we have time. It can be a final offering.
I think I can handle the coffee and sweets, Lori offers, reaching inside a small burgundy purse at her hip and removing her phone. I worked at a coffee shop, remember? The owner also operates a cupcake shop, and the cupcakes are amazing. I also happen to know that he mass bakes on Saturday nights for the Sunday and Monday rush.
See why I love her? Kat demands. She's amazing.
Call me amazing when I get the job done, Lori says, dismissing the compliment and eyeing Maria to ask,
how many am I servicing?
200, Kat says, answering for Maria. What can I do?
Nothing, Lori replies. I'll take over. I'll handle this.
The three women go back and forth a minute, or maybe two, before Maria proclaims,
thank you, Lori,
and hugs her before she darts away. Lori motions to the rest of us.
All of you go. You have better things to do than manage cupcakes.
You're sure you don't need me? Kat asks.
If I can't handle cupcakes, Lori replies, then someone needs to fire me now.
These cupcakes might require a miracle, Kat says. But I do want to check out everything else inside. I'll be back, or you come find me, whichever happens first.
Lori nods, and Kat walks in the other direction.
Hold on, sweetheart, Reese says, catching up to her, his arm settling around her shoulders, and for the first time in my life, I want to have what they have.
I want to pull the woman next to me into my arms. I want to show the damn world she's mine. I want to make her mine, and the craziest fucking part is that I feel no resistance to the idea.
I can find you inside too, Cole, Lori offers. I won't be long.
You could find me inside, I say, turning to face her and reaching for my wallet. But you need to pay, remember? I remove my credit card, replace my wallet, and hand her the card.
Right, she says, reaching for it.
Not to mention, I add, holding the card that she's now holding, as I add, you're with me tonight, remember?
Now and later.
Quite well.
She assures me, heat whipping and cracking between us, that she reacts to the minute I release the card. She takes a hard step backward, wetting her lips while I indulge in a fantasy that involves her mouth on my cock, or pretty much anywhere on my body. She taps a number on her phone and immediately begins a short conversation that is over without a cupcake order being completed.
I was right, she confirms, disconnecting the line.
The shop staff is baking for tomorrow morning. The owner will call me back in a few minutes. I feel good about this working out, but I should try to make calls for backup just in case.
The elevator dings and I step to her, catching her elbow. Come with me, I say, leading her in the opposite direction from the party.
Where are we going?
She asks earnestly. Away from whoever is about to step off that car and force us to be cordial before it's necessary, I inform her, turning us down a hallway. And to an office where you can make calls in private.
Shouldn't we update Maria?
Maria's changing clothes, I say, and we don't have an update. I cut us down yet another hallway.
I know, she says, but...
I stop walking, turn her to face me, my hand sliding under her hair, my mouth slanting over her mouth. Her hand presses to my chest, her body stiff until the moment my tongue licks against hers. A soft, sexy sound escapes her lips, and her elbow softens, but the air conditioning kicks in and she jumps. She gasps and pulls back. "We have to stop," she pants out, her hand firming on my chest again, elbow stiff. "Someone is going to see us." By the time she's finished that statement, I've backed her to a door, opened it, and I'm walking us inside. "Now they can't see us," I say, shutting us inside and flipping the lock.
"Cat will look for us."
"I just want a little taste, sweetheart," I say, my hand sliding under her hair, one of my elevator fantasies presently on my mind. "And then I promise to share you for a few hours," I add, my mouth slanting over hers again, and this time her resistance lasts a split second. She outright moans with the touch of my tongue, and that's all I need to deepen the kiss, the taste of her deliciously sweet and addictive, exactly what I'm after. I back her up against the desk and drag her dress up her hips. She grabs my hands.
"Cole," she breathes out, "we can't do this."
I lift her and set her on the desk. "But I can do this," I say, kissing her hard and fast before I drop to my knees, spread her legs, and yank away her panties. She gasps. God, I love the sounds this woman makes, and then my mouth is already there, on her sex, my tongue licking her up and down, the taste of her salty and sweet, and once again, addictive. I can't get enough of this woman on my tongue, on my lips, or on my cock, where I'll finally have her when we're alone. I drag her legs to my shoulders, forcing her to catch her hands on the desk while I slip one, and then two fingers inside her. She moans and pants, and my name murmurs from her lips. I want to hear my name on this woman's lips over and over again. I lick her, stroke her. I torment her with pleasure just long enough to drive her wild, to drive her to the edge until she's panting out a raspy, "Cole, please." And since she said please, how can I deny her? I give her what she wants and needs. I dart my tongue across her clit before I suckle her deep, pumping my fingers inside her until she's arched against the touch, her sweet, tight sex spasming around my fingers. Her entire body jerks and then begins to tremble with her breathless, "Cole," that fades and her arms collapse. Only then do I ease my fingers from her and slide her legs from my shoulders. I slip my arm around her waist and lift her up and to me. She catches herself with a hand on my chest.
"I can't believe we just did that," she says, her head low, a hint of vulnerability and sweetness to her that I find sexy as hell.
"I can't believe that I didn't do that the day you walked into my office the first time."
"You're my boss," she says, but this time it doesn't read like an objection.
I cup her face and force her gaze to mine. "Does that turn you on?"
"I'm not telling you that I'm turned on by you being my boss."
"Why not? It's me. It's us."
"There is no us."
"Isn't there?" I challenge.
"No," she says, "because, damn you, you are my boss."
She motions to the room.
"And we're doing this in some person's office, which proves what a horrible, horrible influence you are. What are you doing to me?"
"Nothing you aren't doing to me, Lori."
"Then what are we doing?"
Her cell phone rings. "The cupcakes," she says, twisting around to try to locate her phone, grabbing it somewhere behind her to answer the call.
"Hello, Mr. White?"
She scoots forward on the desk and I help her down, easing her skirt over her hips as she continues on her call with,
"Yes. Yes. 200 and coffee with condiments. Perfect. Credit card. Right."
She turns and starts hunting for it. I find it on the floor and snatch it up, offering it to her. She accepts it while I lean in and kiss her, a quick, deep slide of tongue, letting her taste herself on my lips. When our lips part and I pull back, she gives me this sexy, doe-eyed look that makes me want to pull her skirt up again.
"You there, Lori?"
someone on the phone line asks.
"Yes,"
she says, cutting her gaze from mine.
"I have the credit card number."
She reads it off to him and then listens a minute, giving him instructions before she disconnects and announces,
"We have cupcakes and coffee."
"I'm sure there will be a lot of satisfied guests." My hands settle on her waist. "But you are what satisfies me. And by the time tonight's over, you're going to know that." I hold up her panties and stick them in my pocket. "The rest of the room won't know I own you tonight.
but now you do.
Chapter 28. Lori. He owns me. I stand in the bathroom off the hallway I've now made out with my boss in. I stare at my smudged makeup and wild hair and decide that statement is as honest as it gets. He owns me. Good Lord, I all but admitted to being turned on by him being my boss, and I was. I didn't think that could be possible, but in that office that I barely even saw for the distraction of his tongue, I was most definitely living a boss fantasy. Which is much better when you're in the moment than living the aftermath. Or maybe I wasn't living a boss fantasy. Maybe I'm just turned on by Cole in any and all capacity. Not that it matters. For someone who didn't want to mix pleasure with work, I just managed to moan and orgasm on a desk in some nameless person's office that I hope remains nameless. I open my purse and do my best to fix my face and hair with the few items I've creatively fit in my tiny bag. Thankfully, I have lipstick, a concealer, a tiny comb, and a petite hairspray, all of which I waste no time putting to use. Time is critical, not just because of the party either. The longer I'm down some hallway with Cole, the more obvious we are. I walk to the door, steel myself for the man on the other side, and exit. He's leaning on the wall, looking all tall, dark, and GQ. No, all tall, dark, and just owned me in his perfectly fitted suit. The man doesn't even have a hair out of place, standing there, one foot crossed over the other, his arms folded over his perfect broad chest, and me on his lips. He straightens to his barbaric height, and he is barbaric, or I wouldn't have ended up with my skirt to my waist and his tongue doing the things it did to me.
Ready?
He asks. Of course I'm ready, I say, turning away from him and starting down the hallway. I'm not going to let what just happened affect me during the party. I have a job. I have a boss. He gives a low, sexy laugh and steps to my side.
No doubt in my mind, he assures me. And considering I can still taste you on my lips, this party might just be tolerable.
I stop walking and look at him. Cole. He turns to face me, intimacy and warmth in his blue eyes.
Yes, sweetheart.
Don't say anything like that in the room, please, I say, because I'm not sure I can hide my reaction.
But I can say it when we're alone?
Yes, I say, because denial has gotten me nowhere, which was the point of this entire night, but only when we're alone. Now you say yes.
Yes,
he says.
Just us. Our secret.
Our secret. I repeat. And I don't know why, but right then in that moment, agreeing to our secret rather than fighting it somehow deepens the intimacy between us. There you are. At the sound of Maria's exclamation, I jolt and face forward to find her standing in our path, a good 3 feet away, and now dressed in a pale blue knee-length dress with a hint of shimmer. Cole and I start walking toward her.
No one knows but us, sweetheart,
Cole murmurs softly.
I promise.
Meanwhile, I say in an equally low voice, I'm trying to look like I didn't just have my legs around your shoulders. He laughs, a sexy rumble of masculinity that clinches my sex and carries us until we are nearly in front of Maria. Any luck with the sweets or coffee? She asks urgently, meeting us the last few steps. Cupcakes and coffee on the way, I say. The owner of the bakery said it would be an hour about 10 minutes ago. They're going to ask for Cole downstairs. Oh, thank goodness, she breathes out. I'll have security call me when they arrive. How many were they able to supply? 100, I say. And since everyone won't eat a cupcake, we should be fine. And they're bringing coffee in thermoses with condiments. You're an angel, she says, repeating my mother's earlier sentiments. I hate that you had to do this. She starts backing up. You two should head to the party. The guests have started piling in. She turns and heads down the hallway, and Cole glances over at me.
Time for the torture,
he says, motioning me forward. I fall into step with him, remembering his comment about enduring tonight because of me. I take it you don't like these kinds of events.
You take it right.
He confirms as we turn into the main hall between the elevators.
I'd rather